Welcome to the Future of Supply Chain. Each episode, we bring together leaders across the supply chain space to discuss the role of technology and business model innovation on the future of supply chain. The Future of Supply Chain podcast is presented by Dynamo. Dynamo is a pre-seed and seed stage supply chain investor. To learn more about Dynamo and this show, head over to www.dynamo.vc/podcasts or subscribe on the platform of your choice. Now let's get into the show. Here's our host, Santosh Sankar.
Hey, ladies and gents, welcome back to the Future Supply Chain podcast. I'm your host, Santosh Sankar. Joining me today is Gaston Kirk, CEO of OSM Worldwide. Welcome, Gaston.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah,
really great. Appreciate it.
Great to have you join. And, you know, before we jump in, I just want to kind of give our audience that level setting, understanding, knowledge. I'd love a quick, 90-second elevator pitch, so to speak, of OSM for our listeners.
Yes. So OSM is an e-commerce shipping company. And, you know, most people have probably heard of Last Mile. And we're part of a workshare program with the post office. So in essence, what we do is the middle mile. That's going to be everything that gets done. For instance, after the fulfillment company is done picking and packing product off the shelf, or some, you know, larger, even mid-sized retailers who have their own fulfillment shop or fulfillment service will do that themselves. So then we'll pick up from a large retailer or sometimes a fulfillment company, and we'll bring the product over to one of our national facilities. We'll sort them, we'll scan the barcode, and then we'll inject it very deep into the postal system. And then the post office, in essence, makes the final delivery to the residents. And they're really best equipped to do that. So even though you may see a lot of regional carriers and really densely populated areas, the areas that are more sparsely populated, those are really, really tough to deliver that last mile to. And we're pretty fortunate to have that type of relationship with the post office. And it's really a good partnership because we really complement each other.
So kind of what's your story? How did you get into the wild and wonderful world of logistics?
So yeah, shortly after college, I worked for a company that sold mail machines, postal software, internal tracking systems. It was a larger company and that was like a small offshoot of it. I did that for several years. And after that, I worked for a pre-sort bureau. And a pre-sort bureau does what we do, but they do that for letter mail. So again, the post office is very good and well-equipped to deliver to, you know, a resident's home. But all of that other work that goes into, you know, the whole, you know, supply chain in essence, generally speaking, they do much better with partners like ourselves. So for letter mail, not so much. There's probably, you know, less and few and far between pre-sort bureaus. But for packages, it, you know, you can see how it can become a little bit cumbersome. There's, you know, tens of thousands of businesses, and a lot of them are just either starting, or they have a lot of volume, or they have a tremendous amount of volume and multiple facilities. And, you know, the post office is just equipped to get packages when they're already labeled and in a certain sort format, and then they're very good at doing what they do.
Kind of digging into OSM here, you used the word parcel injection, and injection might be something for some folks, they don't hear that term around supply chain. That might be more of a medical term, but what does that mean in this context?
So it really means that we're filling up trucks with parcels that are already sorted to that specific region deeper into, you know, whether it be the state or even sometimes deeper into the zip code within the, or the big city within that state. And then the post office puts it in their own sorting order with the other mail that, or parcels that were delivered to that particular location. And then they're, you know, in essence, delivered to your home. It's called postal injection. So yeah, it is a little bit more of a medical term, but in our industry, I guess it's used quite a bit.
Indeed, indeed. And, you know, so on the domestic side, you mentioned how OSM can directly inject into the USPS network. I'd be curious, kind of within this business, like how is that evolving as FedEx, UPS are, you know, adjusting their strategies, their service commitments, the entire posturing? Does that kind of create tailwinds, opportunities, challenges, perhaps?
A lot of all of the above. You know, the first thing that I think I'd like to point out is that with the post office and over the course of about a year and a half, and this dates us back to 2012, we took, you know, we had the wherewithal to say, hey, your network is very much still designed to be a letter mail network, and we want to help you kind of redesign that into more of a parcel network and one that we think would fit well for you. So, you know, we went back and forth every week. On Wednesday, we would have a conference call with the post office. And, you know, the end result, and again, it took about a year and a half, was our premium network. And I think one of the main things that distinguishes us from our competitors is consistency and speed. In this industry, I mean, you want the least amount of touches, the most efficient system possible. You want it going to the region or the area within the Postal Service where they're going to be able to take it and just make that final delivery. And we're able to do that in a much more efficient manner than they had before. The initial network, and still to this day to a certain degree, so I'm sure you read about, you know, locations are closing and locations are consolidating. A lot of that has to do with the fact that it is two networks. It's a postal letter mail network, and then it's a parcel mail network. And as far as FedEx and UPS go, you know, they continue to refine their own networks. They do a lot of, you know, what they would call dynamic sorting or routing. They'll use the post office for, you know, a lot of the more sparsely populated areas where, you know, they'll have to have a separate delivery driver to take a parcel there, whereas the post office is going there anyway. So there's a lot of advantages to the post office, and I don't see that, you know, ever really changing. To develop a network like theirs, you know, for some of the areas that are, you know, populated by 500 residents and, you know, those people are still actively ordering stuff online, you can see where the challenge comes in. And you go to middle Illinois or middle Wisconsin or, you know, anywhere that, you know, we would call more of a country type of an environment, or, and it's tough. So, yeah. So for UPS and FedEx, it, you know, they can do pretty well in the bigger cities, but it becomes a lot more challenging in the much smaller ones.
And so you also have an international service, and if I may, that's parcel injection into the overseas parcel network. Is that right?
It is. You know, it works very much the same way. Predominantly, we use the USPS. They have two levels of service. So they have a standard level of service, which is going to be 4 to 10 days. And then they have a priority service. I'm sorry, they have a priority service, which is going to be 4 to 10 days. And then they have a standard service, which will be 10 to 14 days. So, you know, almost 2 weeks. And those are business days, so it is a little bit longer. If we get mailings, for instance, that are specific to Canada, for instance, you know, we may use like Canada Post or another postal authority, but it very much works the same way. We're still bringing product into one of our distribution centers. We're preparing a label, we're scanning it, we're sorting it, and then we're distributing it, whether it be generally to the post office, but, you know, for very large mailings that are specific to certain areas, it could be another postal authority. But the process is very, very similar.
And, you know, as some of our listeners are kind of interested in business models and how businesses across supply chain work, what's kind of the underlying business model and revenue model for a business like OSM?
You know, it's ever changing. This is such an interesting space to be in right now. There's more technology, there's more regional players, there's more competition, so to speak. So, you know, for us, we have to kind of constantly be finding new efficiencies, automating facilities, working with the post office, trying to, you know, develop new pilot programs that they might be interested in, just to be able to offer more options to our clients. So I think it's just a really dynamic landscape. That's what makes it really fun.
And so I guess kind of shifting gears a little bit, I noticed on your website that Dr. Squatch is a proud customer of OSM, and I usually get in my stocking stuffer around Christmas, Dr. That's Squatch great. Soap. And I'd be curious, okay, kind of what's the story there, and how has Dr. Squatch leveraged the OSM capabilities?
Yeah, so for the listeners, they're a great company. They're a premium men's all-natural personal care product. So a lot of soaps and shampoos, conditioners, even beard conditioners. So all kinds of products associated to men's care. They have a subscription base. So it's really important to them to not only be able to scale and expand on their subscription base, but to retain clients. And really the best way to do that, aside from having a great product like they do, is to have consistent delivery and speedy delivery. And that's, again, where our premium network comes in. 2 to 5 days is a very tough, it's really a tough service level to uphold. And we do it very well, and we do it very consistently. So generally speaking, when a customer like that, when, you know, an affordable shipping rate, as well as speed and delivery, consistency is important to them, it's just the perfect partner for us. So we've hopefully helped them grow. They've helped us grow, and you know, we're proud to have them as one of our happy customers.
And kind of as we think about technology, selfishly, right, in my role supporting founders who are inserting technology, using technology across supply chain, how does a middle mile network such as OSM leverage technology to gain an advantage and better service customers like Dr. Squatch?
Yeah, that's a great question. We've been developing OSmart, our platform for operations, as well as our portal for, you know, customer interaction and reporting, really since about 2013. So, I mean, this has been really going on for the last 10 years, and it's been such a growing, the e-commerce market's been growing, it's dynamic, it's changing. We've been very fortunate in that regard because we can go to our operators within our facilities and say, hey, how do we make this better? How do we improve upon our platform that we already have? How do we have more options? How does it give us more flexibility? In the same token, we can go to our customers and we can say, what are you looking for? What type of reporting do you want to see? How can we offer you more visibility? So we're able to do that. We do that on a continual basis. We have a very large development team in-house, and they are constantly refining and updating and perfecting. And I don't know if we'll ever get there because it's always changing, but we're trying. And, you know, I think one of the great things about our software and our technology platform is that it's very versatile. So to make a change is not as difficult for a company like us, where it might be very difficult for a company like FedEx or UPS. So some of the basic things that our customer might ask for, we might be able to make a change that's basic in a day. And sometimes that might be unrealistic, but maybe in a month or 3 months, one of the things that they were asking for on their wish list so that their shipping experience could be better, we can provide that.
And I guess kind of thinking about your outlook here, right? You have this technology capability that allows you to be more nimble, agile in service to the customer. What's kind of your broad strokes outlook for e-com volumes as we stare down peak here in a couple months' time?
Well, I mean, we are expecting a heavy peak. We're already starting to see an uptick. So that's really a good sign. It's early, but our volumes are starting to increase already. I think COVID taught a lot of retailers and, you know, large shippers some valuable lessons. And, you know, one of them is that you really don't want to be pinholed or pigeonholed into a one shipper without capacity. So, you know, what we're telling our customers is we have capacity, and we're telling our prospects we have capacity. So even if we're not one of your shippers now, integrate with us, put us into the mix. And should you have any type of disruption with your current supplier, we'd be happy to pick up the slack. So one of the lessons that we learned is that we didn't have enough. So we, because we had to pick and choose, like we can take you, but we can't, you know, and we didn't want to do that necessarily. So we've invested into newer facilities. We've got new sorters, and we're poised and ready. We're ready for the volume. So if you know anyone, Santosh, send them over.
Well, you know, ladies and gents kind of listening in, you know, certainly give Gaston and his team a call. If you don't know how to reach him, reach out to me and I can certainly bridge the gap here. You kind of touched on COVID, and I'd be curious, right? Like COVID put a lot of strain on the system and questioned a lot of what we might have dubbed best practices over the last several decades. And if you kind of can think of perhaps the most important lesson, e-com, retail, those who, you know, tend to leverage the parcel capabilities of the postal system, what should they carry forward with them as a lesson learned or an adjustment they should make going forward from here?
Yeah, I think it's just, you know, dot those I's, cross those T's, check all of your systems, make sure everything's working appropriately, be prepared for, you know, a large uptick in volume. Make sure that you have more options that are available to you than just your present shipper. Because if there is an influx and they have to start deciding how much capacity they're going to bring in, that could very well be some of your parcels that are not part of the system. And I think right now with, you know, there's some things that are certainly looming out there. FedEx has some issues with their contractors. UPS has some ongoing battles with the Teamsters Union. And should any of that stuff become even more of a problem, they're not going to be able to supply everybody, and they're not going to be able to service the clients that they're currently servicing. So have some options available, have a contingency plan. There are some uncertainties out there, and a lot of them were brought by with, you know, inflation and higher gas prices. All of these things really start to affect some of those much smaller players that are, you know, in essence, the contractors that are either wearing a FedEx uniform and not a FedEx employee, or maybe it's a wearing a UPS uniform and, you know, part of the Teamsters Union. But just some things to definitely think about, be prepared for, contingency planning, and making sure that everything that you need to do internally as a company is been checked and is working properly. I would say those are the two main things.
And so kind of pulling on a thread earlier in our conversation, you talked about the capabilities of the parcel service and how, you know, they're able to kind of deliver in a timely way, even in more remote regions. Is there kind of specific reason you don't maybe see a complement to whether it's USPS, but equally some of the larger private parcel businesses, right? FedEx, UPS, because as we look across to similar developed markets like Europe, they just have much more to choose from, frankly. And there's a bit more competition when you think about that last mile parcel segment.
Yeah, I think our landscape is just, it's a lot different than what Europe's is. There are regional players that are certainly cropping up, but it really would not make sense for them to start delivering parcels in, you know, farm areas or country areas that are so sparsely populated. It with the, again, with the cost of gas and just inflation in general, and even before then, it was probably very difficult to justify. You know, now it's much harder when you're going through a region and you have to drive 6 blocks to make your next delivery. And then from there, you're going another hour and a half or another mile and a half. It's really difficult to be able to pay somebody to be able to equip them with a vehicle, to be able to fuel that vehicle. I mean, all of these costs just take away from that parcel that probably didn't have that much margin to begin with. So it's really difficult. I can't see how a regional player can start, you know, playing in some of those regions. In big cities, yeah, it's sure, there's a play.
Yeah. Yeah, I certainly think kind of that density of larger cities enables perhaps some improved economics and capability. But yeah. But certainly agree, kind of some of the more sparsely populated areas, it's tough.
It's tough. It is. Yeah.
Is there an area that's kind of untapped by technology or perhaps kind of overlooked as you survey the landscape?
You know, I'd say that, you know, maybe on the regional carrier play, if there's some type of platform that brings all of them together more concisely, maybe something along those lines, and, you know, so that you can cover the United States with a product that, you know, only delivers to, you know, largely populated areas. But again, I would certainly leave some room for the post office, because you're just going to have some unhappy customers from some outskirts that aren't getting their package or don't have a provider. The other thing is, you know, I think there's some like third party shipping systems that, you know, there's a lot of them out there. And, you know, I think maybe an integration tool for shippers that already have an existing system to integrate to, you know, a regional player or, you know, a national player like ourselves. Maybe those two things from a technology perspective might have some value. And maybe to a certain degree, they're out there. I'm not actively looking for them, but I haven't seen them, at least not mainstream.
And, you know, we've certainly covered a lot of ground. I'll kind of leave you with this last question. Out of curiosity, what's your favorite daily habit as a CEO and leader in the industry?
Oh, man. These days, I'm happy when I wake up. No, I'm joking. daily habit. I stay pretty active. I like working out. I like boxing, yoga, you know, walking my dog. I'm into fishing. None of those do I do daily. I do something active daily. I wouldn't say that it's repetitive or anything like that. But yeah, I like to stay active. I'm involved in a charity. I like to do philanthropy work. So some projects, I guess, outside of the normal day-to-day of OSM Worldwide.
Awesome. Well, with that, we certainly look forward to seeing OSM's continued growth. And equally, we should remember you are a boxer, so we won't mess with you or try to compete too hard.
Oh, thank you. Santosh, hey, I appreciate it, buddy. This was, it was great talking to you. I appreciate you having me on your show. And by all means, if you guys have some other topics, we'll be happy to join in.
Appreciate that. Cheers.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a 5-star review and tell us what you liked. And be sure to head over to podcast.dynamo.vc to keep up to date with our latest content or subscribe on the podcast platform of your choice. Until next time.